Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Check, check, one, two. Is this thing on? Is this thing on? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I hear it. You hear it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this is the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast. My name is Michael Rappaport, a.k.a. the Jeff Rulin of podcasting, a.k.a. the Jake LaMotta of podcasting. I'm in here with G. Moody. Last name rhymes with duty. Today on the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast, we're going to do the damn thing the way we do the damn thing.
Yeah, no doubt.
Plus, we have special guests from the San Antonio Spurs. Strong Island is in the house. Danny Green is in Tsukasa. We're talking all things Spurs, all things San Antonio basketball, Greg Popovich, and what the heck is going on with my man Kawhi Leonard. But first, me and G. Moody, whose last name rhymes with duty, are going to set the table and do the damn thing. Miles Jordan, please give me something real funky. Let's go. Those are Moody Beats.
No doubt.
And my name is Michael Rappaport, a.k.a. the Gringo Man Dingo. I'm here with G. Moody, whose last name rhymes with duty. And as I told you, this is the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcasting, the only non-fact-checking podcast in the business. We created it. We patented it. If you hear it somewhere else, let us know. We'll sick our high-profile Jew lawyers all over their asses. G. Moody, last name rhymes with duty, the three-time podcast co-host of the year. Have no fear, the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast is here. I'm in beautiful, sunny Los Angeles, California. How you doing, Mr. Moody?
Oh, I'm good. Everything is copacetic. Everything is good, bro.
Good.
Good. That's right. We had a blizzard. It was 50 degrees the following day, so the snow is gone, and it was a freak of nature.
Do you think that this is the end of the winter in New York City?
Yeah, I think that's it. Coming up on April, you know, it's going to be warm.
So there's going to be no storms coming in because it was a very stormy weekend.
Yeah, nah. Everything's good. It was 50, like 45 today. It's inching up. That's what I like, man.
Okay. because as you know, it was a very stormy weekend, and I think you know where I'm going with this.
Oh, yeah. 60 Minutes featured a whore to get some credible news from a harlot.
I have to tell you, I'm not going to use those kinds of words because I'm a gentleman, but I will say this. After all the fanfare and all the hoopla, and I'm on the record, I created the nickname, the iconic nickname, Dick Stain Donald Trump. That is me.
Right.
I've been on the front lines. I've put myself on blast talking as much shit as anybody else about Dick Stain Donald Trump.
Okay.
So all that being said, and my work speaks for itself in that area, I will say, for the most part, this whole Stormy Daniels situation is much ado about nothing. And I'll say a few things, and then I would like you to jump in. Number one, we are desensitized from the fact that the president is a cheating scumbag. He's not a stick man. We've said it many times in the past that there's a difference between a stick man and an irresponsible fuck. Donald Trump is an irresponsible, cheating fuck. Okay?
Yeah.
But he is also the president. And because he's so irresponsible and such a cheating fuck, we've sort of been like, we know he's a cheating fuck. We know how he talks about women, and you still voted for him. We know that he cheats. We know that he doesn't give a fuck, and his wife is still with him. So right. I can't blame Dick Stain Donald Trump for getting away with what he can get away with. You only get away with what people let you get away with. So Melania, if people are angry with Donald Trump, they should start being mad with Melania. Like, don't be mad at Donald Trump. Be mad for the people that voted for him. If he's a cheating scumbag and his wife allows it and he's with a porn star and they do what they do. And one of the things that I found sickening and embarrassing to me, as much as I would love to see some videotape of Russian prostitutes peeing all over a new Donald Trump, if I can't actually see the videotapes of the Russian prostitutes peeing all over a new Donald Trump, I don't want to hear about the little tryst. You know, Anderson Cooper sitting up there like asking, you know, in this, you know, CBS 60 Minutes way about their sexual relations. And did they use a rubber? And did they not use a rubber? And she spanked him with the thing. And, you know, he showed me the magazine. Listen, Stormy Daniels was so proud. She's like, I told him, you know, you must not be used to women like me talking to you like this. Sweetheart, you're in the hotel room. He didn't force himself on you. You came up there because he's Donald Trump. You came up there because he's on the magazine. Okay, so you're not like, you're not fucking Joan of Arc here. You're not some, you know, new millennium, you know, strong woman. Okay, you're a jump off. Okay? You're a jump off chick. The only story she has and the only story that's worth discussing is if Donald Trump's goon lawyer, if there was foul play in her and in the goon lawyer paying off, and if the money came from campaign funds. All this, oh, I spanked him on the butt with the magazine that he was on the cover for, and all this, oh, we had sex without the rubber, and all that. I don't care about any of that. Like, if you're really going to talk about the sexual explicit nature of the evening, let's do it. Otherwise, you're embarrassing yourselves. Like,
oh, she's already done that. She's embarrassing herself. You tuned in.
But
you
Anderson Cooper, too.
Because you were hoping for some groundbreaking shit.
Right.
You tuned into this shit. Think of the program.
You tuned
into. No, I didn't. I didn't watch this shit.
Don't say you didn't watch it, because if you didn't watch it, you read up on it. You read the news on it. You saw the clips.
Think of how cheap that news program is for them to go get a whore and act like she has anything of value to say.
And
you
knowing
got what you deserve.
And
you got
knowing
a little
and knowing that she really didn't have anything of value to say. Like, there's pre-interviews. They interviewed her before. They knew exactly what she was going to say, what she wasn't going to say. And to come up with just that, and build it up just for ratings, just to try to bash Trump. And I'm all for bashing Trump. I'm the first one in line to bash this motherfucker. But if you don't have anything that's bashable, kill the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was like a non-story. Now, I will say this. Dick Stain Donald Trump. He tweets about everybody. Tweeted about LeVar Ball. Tweeted about Steph Curry. Tweeted about Colin Kaepernick. He hasn't said a word about Stormy Daniels. There's a reason why. I don't know why, but there is a reason why. I believe everything she did say, and I think the only thing that's of interest in a legal sense is whether or not him and the goon lawyer conspired to pay her off, which I think is very obvious, although they might have covered their tracks, and whether or not the money came from campaign funds. I don't give a shit about...
How are you going to find that out? Come on, man. Donald Trump, if he was with this woman and he was freaking off with her, that doesn't mean you can impeach this guy. They're just trying to just sully his whole shit. So what he was with some hoes? So what? That's what they do. And these motherfuckers try to, and your news program, the 60 Minutes, that shit is whack. If you bringing a hoe on and trying to get some information from her as if she's credible, come on, man. Nobody should tune into that bullshit.
I agree with some of what you're saying. Being that you didn't watch it, you should just shut the fuck up.
No, why should I watch that? I know what time it is. It's a witch hunt. It's everything. Now, tomorrow would be something about, oh, he didn't tie his shoe a certain way. It's always some bullshit. Just let the man rock. He won. Somebody needs to tell Anderson Cooper, yo, he won, yo.
And also, Anderson Cooper, if you're trying to get explicit details, yo, get explicit details.
He's like, scared.
Like, if you're really going to do it, really do it. Like, oh, he didn't use a condom. Where did he skeet? Like, I don't want to hear all that. But if you're going to try to make something salacious, like, you know, really have that conversation. Otherwise, like, yo, this is bullshit, yeah, man. Otherwise, you're trying to embarrass him because he spanked her on the ass with the magazine. And she's trying to act like she's some strong woman. And she's like, oh, I don't think he was used to a woman like me ever talk to.
Come on.
And how many Stormy Daniels he ran through?
Yeah, come on. You ain't nothing special. Yeah, he ran through you. You up in his room.
Donald Trump is the billionaire. And as much as I wanted to see this, you know, be a notch against Donald Trump, because he set the bar so low, because the precedent is already set so at the bottom, this was nothing. This was nothing. And if you want to be mad about this, don't be mad at Donald Trump. Be mad at Melania for tolerating this shit, because the one thing that we could all agree on is that this wasn't just made up. She freaked off with Donald Trump. They freaked off. So the fact that his wife, whether she's the first woman, not first woman, politics, the fact that she's okay with it just goes to show, you know, what kind of person she is. The fact that daughter is okay with it, and those are the people to be mad with. You're going to get away with, it's human nature to try to get away with what you can get away with. That's just the way, you know, humans work, in my opinion.
I got you, man, but I think y'all... Yo, she's there. She sees all the shit that's going. She's putting up with it.
I agree.
Y'all motherfuckers judging her, man. Just let them do their thing, man. Who the fuck is you, man, to be, Melania should stay, should leave the marriage. Mind your fucking business, man.
Yo, listen, all I'm going to say is, Moody, a lot of people find some of the things you say tremendously compromise. What's the word? They find it very...
clever, motherfucker.
No, they don't find it clever. Motherfucker, they don't find it clever. Very controversial. I've had people, you know, what's up with your boy Moody? They've said some terrible things about you in my DMs, and I'm going to let you know, I stick up for you, but you're on fucking thin ice, okay?
Yeah, yo, I don't care. You're on fucking thin ice, man.
I'm just letting you know.
Let him come to me. Why go to him when you could go to me?
Hey, I'm letting you know, some people are really disappointed with what some of the things you're saying, and I just go, yo, it is what it is.
That only means that I'm doing well.
Okay.
That means I'm doing good.
Okay.
Because you can't be with everybody all the time. I told these motherfuckers, I'm an independent thinker. So it ain't no leaning left. It ain't no leaning right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm centered. Mm-hmm. And I try to look at, whereas you bashing motherfuckers, mm-hmm, I try to look at what's the objective. What's the intention? You just bash these motherfuckers. I don't do that. Okay. And them suckers reach out to you.
Yes.
When they, tell these cats to come to me, okay, and I can tell you what time it is.
Hey, listen, I'm going to tell you right now, some of these people have said some really upsetting things, but I just want to let you know I got your back.
I hear you.
Moving on. Let me move on with some other things. Let me see what else is going on. This is crazy. Now, you kind of need the visuals for this. And podcasting is not a visual medium. I'm going to try to articulate this as best I can. So, did you see, Moody, the pictures of Christina Aguilera on the cover of Paper Magazine? She's putting out some new music. She has a new comeback. She's on the cover of Paper Magazine, you know, very famous, you know, fashion sort of hipster magazine. No makeup. Looking, I got to say, very pretty. Very good. Like freckles on her face, like you, unrecognizable. The way it was brought to me is I saw it on social media somewhere. And it says, "Is this even Christina Aguilera?" Like it's that unrecognizable without all the makeup, without all the hair, without all the lipstick. And I was just thinking about, like, you know, this woman has been famous for I don't know how many years. It's got to be close to 20 years. I mean, she's not my cup of tea, but obviously everybody knows Christina Aguilera. Yeah, and, you know, she's a huge fucking star. And she's been walking around with, like, a fake face all these years. Like, makeup. You got to look at it. It's shocking to see. Because when you look at these pictures here, it looks like a 23-year-old, fresh-faced, you know, blue-eyed model with, like, freckles. And you're like, oh, this is gorgeous. And, like, you literally, if you guess 10 people, like, who is this person? She's that unrecognizable. And now she's like, I'm going to be the real me. And I'm like,
oh,
you sacrificed the real you this long, and this is what you were covering up? It's not like she looks beautiful in these new pictures. She looked like a Wicked Witch of the West the last time I saw her, with the makeup and the wigs and the, you know, she's sashaying and yeah, 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 and all this bullshit. Yeah. And now she looks like, you know, like a blonde-headed beach bunny.
Good. Good. At least she took all that shit off and say, yo, she's recognizing her own beauty, man. Salute. Give her a shout out.
Yeah, no, it's just wild to me. Like, you know, the sort of the self-hate and the fear. And you think this is what people like. And I'm like, if she could sing the way she used to be able to sing and she looks like this, it's literally like an entirely new person. Like, it's that shocking. You got to check it out. I didn't know if you saw it or not, or the people saw it, but look up Christina Aguilera on Paper Magazine and you're going to be like, this shit is bugged out. Like, she's literally unrecognizable.
I'm going to check it.
So as I told you, later on in the show, we got my man Broadway Danny Green from Strong Island, New York City. From Long Island. Not that many. Actually, a lot of ball players have come out of Long Island.
Mike James, Shelton Jones, formerly from St. John's. I think he played in the league for he had a cup of tea in the league. Yeah, it's a few.
The good
few
doctor, Dr. J, Eddie Murphy's from Long Island. Howard Stern is from Long Island. Natalie Portman is from Long Island. The list. Anthony Scaramucci, the fucking Mooch, he's from Long Island. My mother's from Long Island. So Broadway Danny Green. I don't know if anyone ever called him that, but you know the Woody Allen movie, Broadway Danny Rose, is definitely one of my favorite movies. He's coming on. I just talked to him. Good dude. Talk about the art of shooting. 300 makes. I talked to him about shooting, like, you know, like in a day, like when you're like that level of shooting. Chris Mullen, I talked to him about it one time. He said he would do 400 to 500 makes.
Damn.
Not shots, makes.
Just make, yeah. Ooh. Repetition, keep it going. That's these guys are professionals. They take it very serious.
Yeah, and they've perfected. And Danny Green is a professional basketball player, and he's a sharp shooting San Antonio Spur. A champion at North Carolina. I was out of the league. Was in the D League. Went overseas. Got picked up by the Spurs. Got cut by the Spurs. And then, you know, he won championship with one of my favorite teams, the San Antonio Spurs, that dismantled your Miami Heat, led by LeBron James. So we talk about all that later on in the show. Another thing I want to talk to you about, and I'm dying for some more people to see it. Gee, you have to watch this. You have Netflix. I watched this documentary, 6-hour documentary. And when you watch it, you'll remember seeing the clips on 60 Minutes, on Oprah Winfrey. It's this documentary called Wild, Wild Country on Netflix. And it's essentially about this guru who was like a famous guru, one of these, you know, gurus in India, and he's practicing love and peace and, you know, yoga and, you know, mm-hmm. free sex and all this crazy shit. And you know, he had followers and, you know, all this, you know, like the guru stuff. His name is Sri Rajneesh. And so he took his act on the road. This is in 1981. Him and his followers, they moved to a small, sleepy town. I believe it was like 97 people in this small, sleepy town in Oregon. And they were able to sort of, you know, purchase this big plot of land. And because they had so much money in donations and so many followers, and it wasn't just like, you know, it wasn't poor people. It was people with money. They had engineers. They had builders. Like, you know, I can't remember what it started with. They built up this city, you know, in this, you know, I think it was like 82 acres of land in the middle of like this sleepy town in Oregon. Next thing you know, they started buying up the town next door, and then they wanted to continue buying shit, you know, and they were finding all the loopholes. Like, it's some sort of law. Like, if you have, like, 150 people in a town, you can form a city. And then if you form a city, you can do this, and then you have a mayor. Anyway, it got out of control quick. Okay? Wow. And the next thing you know, they wanted to take over this bigger town. And I think the town was like 10,000 people. So what the fuck, these Rajneesh people, that's what they were being called. They went to like Houston. They went to New York. They went to Philly. They went to Los Angeles. And they would recruit. This is all documented. All of it's on film. They would recruit homeless people to come to the town. They would, you know, fix their teeth, clean them, get them sober. Wow. And then they tried to get them to become legal residents of the town, because they're like, oh, these are our people. We got them off the fucking streets. We're going to have them vote. We're going to wind up winning the vote. We're going to take over the next town. Anyway, it became like a whole thing. They were trying to take over the fucking state of Oregon.
Wow.
And it's just wild. And the whole thing is documented. I don't know if I'm doing a great job of articulating it, but it's on Netflix. I watched the whole thing in one sitting. It's called Wild, Wild Country, and it's bugged the fuck out.
I'm gonna check it out.
Yo, it is bugged the fuck out. It's really bugged out, and it's like one of these things that if it wasn't a documentary, you'd be like, this never took place. This couldn't happen. There's no way this could happen. And it happened. They were trying to take over the whole fucking state. And the feds came in, and, you know, it was all this peace and free love shit, but they built an entire city. Like, the idea of it was good. But you know, listen, the leader, Sri Rajneesh, he's driving around literally in 19 fucking Rolls Royces. You know what I mean? He's banging all the people in there. It's just this, it's crazy. So it's really about, you know, cults and power and, you know, sort of these false heroes and this hero worship and all that stuff. And I can't recommend it, you know, higher. Like, so everybody should check it out. I would love to, you know, hear what you guys think of it. It's bugged out. And also, I want to say this. Yo, you can email us. Okay, I'm going to get a phone number because we're going to start taking phone calls. But you can email us up at iamrappaportpodcast@gmail.com. Email us whatever you want. Okay? Email us the parts of the shows that you do like. Email us sick fuck of the week suggestions. I want to give a shout out to the people that are sending me all the sick fuck of the week suggestions over there on my DMs on Instagram. Email us, Mike Rapp, you know, we like when you say this. We don't like when you say that. Email us whatever you want. iamrappaportpodcast@gmail.com. I want to, you know, have communication with the listeners of the world's greatest podcast there is. Yep. And since we're the world's greatest podcast, obviously we have the world's greatest fans. And I hear from a lot of you guys on Twitter, and I hear from a lot of you guys on Instagram. But you can hit us up anytime. Questions, suggestions, comments, criticism, whatever the fuck you want. Okay, yep. One more time. I am rappaportpodcast@gmail.com. What else is going on?
Did you see Kentucky over the weekend? They lost, and Calipari didn't shake hands with the team that beat them.
Is that right?
Yeah, he didn't shake hands. He said, "Oh, they were celebrating, and we didn't want to." Come on, man. See, that's that bullshit.
That
come
is
on,
that
man.
Bullshit. That's See? That bullshit. Just because you didn't colors. Win, you're going to be on that bullshit. That's that sucker shit.
Yep, he did it.
Calipari did that. He didn't shake hands with the coach, the players of the other team.
Yep.
What's the matter, Johnny? Huh? You cocksucker! You motherfucker! We beat you fair and fucking square, Johnny! Huh? I know this cocksucker. I know fucking Calipari. All these fucking years, his team's beating us by fucking 30, 40 fucking points. John Wall, Boogie fucking Cousins, and Anthony the fucking Unibrow Davis. You can't shake my fucking players' hands, Johnny. I'll bust your fucking head open. Meet me in the fucking locker room then. Fucking Johnny Calipari.
Johnny.
Every fucking year he's beating our fucking team. My kids played the fucking right way. You shake those fucking kids' hands. You snake oil cocksucker, you. The New York Giants are threatening to trade Odell Beckham. Don't do it.
I say get rid of this fucking guy.
Don't do it.
You know why?
Don't fucking.
You know why? He has nothing really to show for football. What? One play, they lost the playoff game, and he had three drops. So what's the value? We're not getting production. The Giants ain't getting production. And he's wilding. Now you want max contract. Yo, let this motherfucker go.
Yo, let me tell you something. We've been very open and honest. I've ILO'd him. We've been on him. We did a whole thing a couple of weeks ago about cutting his hair for the culture. But he's a once-in-a-generation talent. Yes, he has shitty playoff game. You're not going to replace that kind of talent. And me personally, I believe that he's going to put it all together and get it all together. And unless they could get someone and something or some sort of value that is an immediate improvement to the team. Because I'm telling you right now, G, with the Knicks being where they're at and the fact that the Patriots, they're coming back. This might be the last stance. It might not be the last stance. Whatever the case is, they are coming back. 2018-2019 season, the NFL will be dealing once again with the New England Patriots. All right? And if I don't have the New York Giants to root for, it makes it really fucking hard. Okay? Now, last year was an abomination. But if they're not going to get somebody who's going to come in there, I can't do a rebuilding process with the Giants. I'm doing a rebuilding process with the fucking Knicks.
You got two rehabs going on.
Yeah, we need something. You know, I'm not with the baseball shit. I know that the Yankees are good. That means nothing to me. Like, of course I want to see the Yankees and the Mets do good, but as a New York sports fan, yo, you can't trade somebody just because they're acting a little stupid in the offseason. This guy's ridiculous.
I'm saying, has that talent, all that shit you talk about, all them, the Captain Kangaroo catches
yes.
and one hit, but has that translated into winning? No, all that talent. So I'm in the owner's shoes now. All that talent hasn't translated into us winning. We made the playoff one time, and you're this world's greatest football catcher, but it's not translating into winning. And you wilding off
you
the wilding. Field.
He's got to chill, man, because I fuck with this guy, man. He's got to.
So I know. So as an owner, I look at, yo, you want 200 mil? You want to be the highest played football player. So we got to look at production and behavior. Fuck all the other shit. That's what they need to tell these motherfuckers straight up and down. All that bullshit you doing off the field is affecting negotiations, homeboy.
Hey, he knows it. I just think they need to re-up with him, and I don't want to get rid of Odell Beckham with the Giants. We talked about this the other day, and my personal feelings and everybody who listens to the podcast aside, I was thinking about this because since Johnny Fuck Up had his little piss day, as we called it the other day, you know, where he played a game of catch in front of the scouts.
Piss day.
You know, he came out and said the right thing about Colin Kaepernick, and you know, a lot of you know, people like us, we were talking about, me and Gerald basically both said that You thought that Kaepernick was a distraction, and that you thought that Manziel was a distraction, and because whether we like it or not, agree with or not, they can be deemed distractions to the teams. Okay, Eric Reed, I don't know if you follow football.
I know
Eric Reed's the cornerback, who former All Pro. He's one of the players that kneeled with Colin Kaepernick when Kaepernick was in San Francisco. Obviously, he, unless you're a football head, but he's a super duper talent.
Yep.
Right now, Eric Reed is not with any team in the NFL.
Yeah.
And he's even gone as far as saying he wouldn't kneel. Like he basically, they broke him. You know, they said he wouldn't kneel. He won't be a distraction if he goes to any team. And after this young man was shot in San Francisco for the very reason that Colin Kaepernick was kneeling to bring attention to police brutality. I was thinking about this. I was like, forget my feelings about Manziel. Because aside from when homeboy started talking greasy, I could give two shits about him. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking like, yo, the NFL is really, like, Colin Kaepernick is never playing football again. I'm not sure whether or not Eric Reed will get signed or not get signed. He's 26 years old. He's I don't want to say he's an elite defender, but he's on the precipice of being elite. Like, he should absolutely 100% be signed. And I was thinking about how fucked up this situation is. And whether or not Manziel has the skill set to play in the NFL or not, you know, because Manziel's kind of sort of trying to get out of the way of, yo, he's going to be the sacrificial lamb. Because like what Shannon Sharp was saying, it was like, yo, if Johnny Manziel plays in the NFL, the black fans that protested Papa John's and shut down Papa John's, and like it's not just white fans. Like if Johnny Manziel plays in the NFL, it's going to be a problem. And as far as I'm concerned, the blatant discrimination that's taken place with Colin Kaepernick and the blatant discrimination that's taken place with this kid, Eric Reed, it's an eye for an eye. Like, yo, if Kaepernick ain't playing, Johnny Manziel, you might grow 5 inches. You might get your life together. You might be sober for the next 2 years. You ain't playing, Duke. Like, this is a situation where, and I'm all for it. It's like, you're not getting in the league when you had all the opportunities that Johnny Manziel had. You snorted him away, you drank him away, you smacked chicks away, and Colin Kaepernick, who's done nothing, but we can agree, you could call him a distraction. He's not playing in the league? Well, then you ain't playing in the league either, Duke. It's like, yo, it's not happening.
He has a better chance.
You're not playing in this fucking league, homeboy.
Now,
period.
Wait. Now, Eric Reed, that guy, the safety, now he's sending out like little leaflets saying, I won't kneel.
Right.
And I'm saying to myself, why you do it in the first place? You can't be a part-time Huey Newton motherfucker. You gotta, if you force something, this is that you should expect that would be the consequence. Now, you're gonna basically beg these people, right? Oh, I won't do it. So, obviously, you doing it initially didn't mean shit. That's like Muhammad Ali on some... Oh, no, I didn't mean that.
It's crazy.
It looks ridiculous.
It's fucked up. But, just like Colin Kaepernick, people are like, well, why did this happen? Why did it also, like, you know, your feelings, your thoughts, and your ways to protest, you know, and your ideas, and how you're articulating your feelings, you have a right to change and evolve those feelings. You know, you don't think the same way you thought when you were 30 years old, as do I. You know, and Eric Reed can still be about it. And he should have, you know, I'm just saying, it's like people, like, you know, in this day and age, you know, because of social media and everything is marked down, and you did this and we have a photo of you doing that and this tweet. Yo, you know, I've said it before. Yeah, there's tweets that I would like to have taken back. You know what I mean? There's things that I've said that I would like to have taken back. There's comments that we've made on this show that if you scroll through them, you might be like, yo, these motherfuckers are wild. You know what I mean? So people are entitled to say things, evolve, change, grow, you know, extensions of it and all that stuff. So I'm just saying, it's going to be an interesting situation with this Johnny fuck-up situation. But as far as I'm concerned, if Cap ain't playing, I don't give a fuck what you do, Duke. You ain't playing in the NFL either,
well,
period.
Cap, I'm going to tell you now, Cap ain't playing, and Manziel's going to get on a roster. Because as the owners, Manziel got personal issues. You know what I'm saying? He not going to fuck with our bottom line and alienate our fans. You look at it, try to look at it from their
perspective. Yeah, but what Shannon Sharpe was saying is like, oh no, you are going to alienate the fans. You're going to alienate the black fans. That's what he was articulating. Just like, yo, Papa Absolutely. John's is gone because the black fans were like, nah, Duke. Like, they have voices too. Football, like, the people that watch football aren't just white people. You know what I mean? Like, this is, you know, there's other people that watch this shit.
The majority, you can't lose 70% or 80% of the fan base, which is white motherfuckers.
So if
you alienate them, that's when the ratings and all that shit go down. And this is what's happening. So, yo, you can't lose the majority of the fan base. And you and these people coming out here kneeling, that's something that affects the bottom line with those dudes. It's about, their, you know, the owners, how they look at it. I understand all that shit you're talking to, but I try to look at it from their point of view. I don't want that shit on my team if I'm an owner. That's why homeboy's like, Eric Reed is like, oh, putting out flyers and shit. I won't be kneeling. So if I'm an owner, I would kick it to him like, why are you doing it in the first place, motherfucker?
Well,
it's, so it don't mean shit.
This whole situation, this story is looming around the NFL, and we're in March, and this shit is going to continue to be an issue around the NFL. It is not going anywhere. As much as we all kind of want to be like, yo, I just want to watch a fucking ball game, this shit ain't going nowhere. It ain't going nowhere. The shit is, it's real. What else is going? Yo, NBA is getting ready to be playoffs. Like, nine games. Like, it's getting ready to come down to, you know, that time of the year.
Yeah, yeah. And I see now the Golden State Warriors have injuries. And LeBron, it looks like we got a little clearing. Maybe he get to the championship. Maybe he do it again, yo.
Oh, I there's no doubt in my mind. They're going to the championship. I mean, barring injury to LeBron, Toronto ain't ready. Washington's all fucked up. Kyrie, I believe he had a meniscus injury, the surgery, and you could come back from that. I don't know if it's meniscus, but they said non-intrusive, and sometimes that's a buzzword. You know, I'm in the know in this sports world. Sometimes that's a buzzword as a meniscus tear. If you come back from that too soon, I believe that's what Brandon Roy had. Remember Brandon Roy, Portland Trailblazers career? I believe, I don't know. I'm just saying, I'm not sure if that's what it is. Cleveland's going to the finals. There's nobody in the East that's going to beat them. That guy, LeBron James, is a fucking animal. He's an animal. He's a fucking animal, man.
15th year.
What is it?
15th year and doing it. And doing it. Yo, 15 years, man. Nobody's ever played like that in their 15th year. Actually, this is like his best season, so.
Right. Statistically, like this last month was his best statistic month ever.
So what are we watching? That's my whole point in saying, what kind of athlete are we watching? This might be the greatest dude.
I'm not arguing with it. That doesn't mean I have to dick ride him like you do, Duke.
Yo, I don't have to dick ride him like you do, Duke. We know ball. So when you see something extraordinary, we've seen the nicest motherfuckers. So when you see somebody nicer than the nicest dude, yo, it's special. And I like it. And I like ball. See, you just want to try to hate on him. Yo, just acknowledge that dude's greatness, man, as far as a complete basketball player. You got to give him the props, yo.
Yeah, I hear you, man. What place does this dude work at? This cornball motherfucker.
Who that?
This corny ass motherfucker. What is his name? Travis Clay. You know? Clay Travis. He works at.
I'm not familiar with.
He's one of these Duke University of Duke looking motherfuckers, man.
Oh.
One of these Christian Laettner motherfuckers. He's like always, you know. He's always trying to stir the pot, ass motherfucker. Whatever.
What he did?
He talking shit about my girl, Michelle Beadle, He said she's absurdly overpaid at $5 million per year. Yo, Duke, fuck is you counting her money for, Duke? Why you worrying about her money, Duke? She getting $5 million a year. Let her live. Let her shine, Clay Travis. Yeah. Why you worrying about her money? She's overpaid. You not dope. I know you think you dope. You not dope, though, money. You're not dope. And the fact that you're worried about what a lady is making, what another person is making, let her live. Let her count her checks. Why is you in her pockets, Duke? The fuck is you doing, Clay Travis?
Yeah, I read that. That's the ultimate hater shit. That's like you in the press, you in the paper, hating on a woman's salary that she's making money, and you're earmarking, you're laying out things as to why she shouldn't be paid. That's the ultimate hater. You could just chill the fuck out.
Yeah, you could talk shit. You could say she's not good, but she's overpaid. Why you counting her money, man? The fuck is wrong with you, dude?
Yeah.
Sound crazy, man.
You just talk among your friends with that. You don't put that out in public. It makes you look crazy, man.
Yeah, you're playing yourself. Clay Travis, Travis Clay, whatever the fuck your name is. It's this guy got two first names as his name. Travis. It could be like either. Travis Clay, Clay Travis. Corny, Duke.
He sound like a country singer. That sound like a country singer.
Yeah, man. Get your motherfucking guitar and get the fuck up out of here, man. Yo, Miles Jordan. Let me get that sick fuck of the week music.
This award is earned, not given. It's called the Sick Fuck of the Week. This guy's really sick. Lock him up.
How could you do it?
Don't let him out.
Damn. You fucked the dog?
You what?
You fucked the dog? Why would you fuck the dog? Why would you fuck your girlfriend's dog?
What? Sick fuck.
The Sick Fuck of the Week. It's earned.
Earned.
Not given. You did
what?
No. No.
No.
No!
Oh, yeah. That's it right there. That's it. Okay. That's the Sick Fuck of the Week theme song. That's the Sick Fuck of the Week theme song. This is an award that is earned, not given. It is an award, yes, that is earned, but not given. It's given to the sickest of the sick fucks out there. As I told you, coming up soon, we are going to have a segment, which is for the sicker sick fucks of the week, and it will be called Bring Out the Gimp. But until then, we will be just calling these people the sick fucks of the week. Number one, police are looking for a man. A Brooklyn subway train rider on the G train. Over there on Bergen Street. You know about the G train, G?
Of course, man. Greenpoint.
A 21-year-old man, they have pictures of this sick fuck, punched a 5-year-old boy in the face on the G train. The fuck is you doing, Duke?
Yo.
Yo, look this dude up. 20 years old. They say he's about 6 feet, 160 pounds, with a medium build. Look this piece of shit up if you're in New York. He is this week's sick fuck of the week, and he's on the lam. He punched a 5-year-old boy in the face on the train.
Man, that's that, yo, the subways, they have that, those mental, public transportation, anybody can ride. Always keep your kids near, man. It's a lot of crazy fools out there, yo.
Yeah, man. This guy, this sick fuck, in the future, he'd be on the Bring Out the Gimp section of the show. Okay, because there's nothing funny about this sick fuck. See, the Bring Out the Gimp segment is for because sick fucks, there's got to be, I don't know, not a sense of humor, but it's just a certain je ne sais quoi. Punching a 5-year-old, that's more like Bring Out the Gimp. This piece of shit that I'm about to bring up, Bring Out the Gimp. His name is Austin Ekberg. Austin Ekberg, a 21-year-old sex offender, was arrested Thursday. This piece of shit in Rockford, Illinois, was pleasuring himself in front of preteen girls selling Girl Scout cookies. Now lock him up and send him to the wolves. Let him bang him in the ass. Let him get banged in the ass. With or without the Wonder Bread bag. With or without the olive oil. Let the fellas, let all the boys figure out what they're going to do with Austin Ekberg.
At their discretion.
You want to give him that Wonder Bread bag? Because you want to protect yourself from this sick fuck? Your choice. If you want to go a raw dog without a bag, then catch a raw dog without a bag. Lock this animal up for the rest of his life.
And them dudes be married, you know, be naked in a service station.
Third sick fuck of the week. I mean, this guy's a real, real sick fuck, man. Real sick fuck. Guy's name is Andrew Turley. And if you look up the picture of Andrew Turley, gee, take a wild guess what he looks like.
What is it?
A sick fuck. This piece of shit got 60 years in the can. 60 years in prison. And thank God, you ain't coming out of jail, Andrew Turley. Okay? You're going to be somebody's wife in prison. That's right. You're going to be they're not going to be calling you Andrew. They're going to be calling you Andrea. Because this piece of shit tried to sell his four-year-old daughter for sex. His four-year-old daughter. This is a piece of shit. This is a dog. God. This guy shouldn't even be on the sick fuck of the week segment. He should be on the bring out the gimp segment. Because when we bring him out, he should be wrapped up, chained, with a fucking, with a rubber ball in his mouth, like a gimp. Okay, and we should show him to the world. This is a piece of shit. Bring out the gimp. Andrew Turley, you sick fuck. You're not getting out of prison. You're not getting out of... I don't know why they even call it 60 years. You ain't never getting out, Duke. Andrea Turley, that's your fucking nickname. Drea. Your husband's going to be calling you Drea. He's going to first start calling you Andrea, and then it's just going to be Drea, then it's just going to be Dre. And then when he passes you off to all the homies, they're going to be calling you Dre. Finally, South Korea. We've been talking about it since the Olympics. 80 dogs. You can look it up on Instagram. Very, very hard to see. Puppies, all sorts of dogs. There was a dog that looked exactly like my dog. The people's dog. The I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast news dog. 80 dogs were found suffering on a South Korean dog meat farm and were rescued and in Canada. Thank God for conquering these dog-eating sick fucks in Canada. 80 dogs were saved, and thank God. Unfortunately, there's 80 dogs that got away from these sick fucks, these dog-eating sick fucks.
Hey, you ever had a Chihuahua burger, motherfucker? Don't knock it till you try it.
Yeah. Finally, a woman in Oregon was charged with first-degree animal abuse in a 7-year-old dog's death. This sick fuck named Noelle Georgia Moore. And Gerald, do you know what Noelle Georgia Moore looks like?
No, I don't. What?
She looks like a sick fuck. She was arrested for taking her ex-boyfriend's chihuahua, putting him in the oven, and trying to cook, and obviously killing the fucking dog. You sick animal, you. You sick animal, you.
Yeah, that's not some culture shit.
No, that's the way barbaric to get back at him. And if you look at this lunatic, I don't know how she even pulled any man in the first place. She's got fucking crazy eyes. She looks fucking cuckoo. Cuckoo.
I got one, man. I got the last one, bro.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, man, this is crazy. Brittany Zamora, a 27-year-old teacher from Las Brias Academy Elementary School in Goodyear, Arizona, has been accused of giving a mic check to a 13-year-old student in the classroom.
Lock this animal up. Now, I don't know if they have a Wonder Bread bag treatment for this animal. And if you look her up, I saw a picture of her. If you saw her on Instagram, you'd say, this is a pretty looking girl, right?
Yes, married.
She doesn't look like your conventional, obvious sick fuck of the week. She looks, she's pretty.
Yeah.
But looks can be deceiving, you sick fuck. Brittany Zamora. You're going to jail and you ain't ever coming out. A 13-year-old boy, you fucking animal, you.
Blew his fucking socks off, man. 13 years old?
Come on, man. Come on, man. That ain't nothing dope about that. Listen.
That shit's fucked up, man.
Listen, listen. These are sick people. They're the sick fucks of the week. Okay? It's time to move on. Listen. Broadway right. Danny Green, sharpshooter for the San Antonio Spurs, coming up next on the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast. We're talking Kawhi. We're talking Popovich. We're talking his shooting routine. We're talking Steph Curry. We're talking Kobe. He was a teammate of LeBron James. You know, he was drafted by the Cleveland Cavaliers. We're talking LeBron. We're talking hoops. From Long Island, Danny Green coming up next on the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast. Stay with me.
Yo, yo.
Danny.
What's up, man?
Ha, 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 ha. Rappaport.
How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good, man. You good?
I'm good.
All right. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you, man. Thanks for reaching out.
Taking the time. Come on, man. I'm a big fan. I'm from Manhattan. My mother's from Long Island, so I've been following you for a long time.
Okay. Same.
All right.
Big fan.
Danny Green, San Antonio Spur, NCAA college champion, NBA champion on one of my favorite NBA teams of all time, which effectively ended the reign of the evil Miami Heat dynasty. I appreciate you taking the time to rock with me on the I Am Rappaport Stereo Podcast, Danny.
Anytime, man. I appreciate you having me.
So let me ask you a question. So how does a kid from Long Island, Strong Island, same place my mother is from, wind up playing in Chapel Hill?
Oh, man. You know, my dad he's a big sports fan, too. So growing up, he watched all basketball. You know, he wasn't a Knicks fan, you know. Sadly, I mean, I didn't grow up a Knicks fan, even though they didn't have great years during those times anyway. But, you know, he was a big Michael Jordan fan. We watched a lot of the Bulls, but he's also a big North Carolina fan.
Mm.
So it was very easy growing up. And I was a big North Carolina fan, too. I watched a lot of those guys play, you know, from Sheed to Stack to, you know, VC, you know, all those guys. Even some of them are still around. But, you know, once I was recruited, I wasn't heavily recruited until going into my senior year. You know, you go to certain elite camps, they invite you to, like Nike, ABCD, you know, back then. Coming from Long Island, you don't get a lot of recognition. You don't get a lot of – so the only way to get recruited, you have to do well in those camps. Lucky for me, you know, I did well, you know, going into my senior – I did decently going into my junior year. I got some D1 scouts, D1 schools recruiting me. But going into my senior year, I did really well. And then, you know, North Carolina liked what I had to offer, I guess. And, you know, once they started recruiting me, it was over for me. It was an easy decision for me. So I'm a big fan since I was a kid. And when I went to Chapel Hill, it was very different from New York, obviously. But, you know, Long Island is it's a lot slower paced than the city, but very different from New York.
So what is it like going down there? Like, what is it like being a player? Like, North Carolina, I mean, Worthy, that Jordan guy, you know, and so on and so on. Like, what is it really like being a Tar Heel for North Carolina?
I mean, the alum is as you go down the list, are ridiculous. You know, the guys that we have, the brotherhood is unreal as well. But being on that campus, being a basketball player on that campus, obviously North Carolina is a pretty nice-sized state, and they have other great schools around it. You know, Duke is about 10 minutes up the road. NC State, 20-25 minutes, you know, away. Wake Forest is not too far, hour and some change. There's a lot of schools there that you know, really good. But being in Chapel Hill, it's a college town. Those people worship, you know, the ground that you walk on. And it was a great experience for me. It was unbelievable. I had to do 4 years there. I was lucky to finish, you know, winning in my senior year. But going back, they still show a lot of love. And, you know, I said the South is very different from New York, so the people there, you know, very nice Southern hospitality, and, you know, they cheer you on. There's a big, big sports area all around, you know, from all three areas in the, you know, Duke, North Carolina, NC State. There's a lot going on. The big rivalries, but a lot of fun to watch and play and be a part of, you know, that brotherhood, that fraternity per se. And, you'll see those guys come back, watch you play, and acknowledge you and show you love like you're part of the family. So, so it's been a blessing for me.
You know, like historically, you know, like UCLA has their crew and they have their summer games. You know, and you just rattled off a bunch of people, obviously all the Duke, North Carolina State and North Carolina guys. When you were at college, who were some of the alum that, you know, would come back to North Carolina that you were playing against, you know, former college stars and also, and then current pros? Like, what do you remember about those summer games?
Oh man, those were, it was, you know, obviously a culture shock. You know, you're still kind of a fan, but you're a player, you know, you're still a fan of a lot of those guys. It's like your first year in the NBA. When you're playing against those guys and playing with some of the guys, you're still kind of, you know, I guess in fan shock. I don't know how to explain it. But, you know, it takes a while for you to get over that, you know, to liberalize and look at them as other basketball players too. So at Carolina, when I got there, you know, a lot of those guys that had just won a national championship, we came there right after they won one in 2005. They had Sean May, Raymond Felton, Rashad McCants, Jawad Williams, you know, Marvin Williams. They had all those guys there. And we looked up to a lot of them, but they were still around doing summer school. A lot of them were still young, coming back and playing. And we played against them a lot, which was you know, great for me to watch them and on TV win national championship and then also be able to play with them in the summertime. But we also had guys like Shamon Williams, who was always back. Joe Forte was there. He was doing summer school for a little bit there. He was a monster. So we had quite a few number of random guys come through, you know, different times of the summer. And even some of the guys from Duke would come over, some of the guys from State. You know, he had Big Voss and his brother. The list goes on. They all come back. And now I think we're doing a better job with all the social media, with all the way to connect and guys playing overseas, traveling overseas, coaching overseas. But a lot of those guys, after they left, a lot of them haven't stayed here or stayed in North Carolina. We have, you know, a nice little group chat on WhatsApp where we keep updated with each other and try to keep the brotherhood going. And if we have any event or camp or anything, whatever, we try to support each other. And we still, you know, watch some of the college games together and talk through the chat of what's going on in the tournament. And obviously, we took a tough L. You know, it was hard to watch, but you know, we're still very much, you know, in contact with each other.
Well, you know, you played 4 years. Your championship team of 2009. You had guys, you know, who stayed there. You know, Hansborough. You know, he stuck around, and you know, you stayed 4 years. What do you think? I mean, and it's not even that long ago. When I say 2009, it's like it's not even 10 years ago. But the one and done madness that's running through college basketball. I mean, what is your take on it? You know, now, but like Duke, like yo, they know, like yo, if we're gonna get these guys, it's better to have them for 1 year than no years.
Pretty much. I mean, the top recruits, you know, those guys are not trying to stay in college. And if you want those top recruits, you got to be okay with it. And obviously, I think it's good for a kid to at least do 1 year of college, if not two, just to mature, you know, as a man, be an adult. But some of these kids are born, you know, or grow very fast. And in high school, they're men amongst boys. You know, they're huge and athletic, so they're ready for the NBA. But I think that's a very small number of kids. And, you know, obviously, I think if you have the option or the opportunity to jump for the NBA from high school and be able to work and provide for your family at 18, 19 years old, you should have that opportunity. But a lot of them, I think it kind of waters down and ruins some of the draft, some of, you know, the rookies, some of the league a little bit because they just draft off potential. And I think that they could show their potential, show the growth or mature and be more or better player and understand that they did at least 1 year, you know, 2 years of college, I think is helpful. But, I said, my experience 4 years was great. It helped me grow a ton. I learned a lot, not just about basketball, but about life and how to adjust and adapt to being in this life and how to reel yourself in, be a professional, how to pay bills, how to, you know, be an adult, do your own laundry. Like a lot of stuff, these kids coming out of high school, coming out of 1 year of college, they barely know how to fold their own clothes and do their own laundry.
Right.
So they come and they have their parents moving with them, or they have their parents or their friends trying to help them maintain or do financial stuff. And a lot of times, I'm not saying they don't have the best interest, but sometimes they don't know what they're doing either. And that's where it gets lost in the first couple of years. You know, they miss out on saving some money or having things, you know, put in the right place when they could have been saving or doing this or investing a lot earlier in their careers.
When you look back on your run, 2009, your North Carolina team that, you know, even in the finals, you guys kicked ass, you know, you just ran through teams. You know, what is the thing that sticks out?
We had a good run.
You had a good run. You had a good run. What is the thing? I mean, it's hard to pinpoint one thing, but like, what is, when I start talking about that and it's March right now and, you know, we're in the middle of it, like, what are the sort of things that come into your head about your time winning that championship?
I think for me, each year was like a grind, and each year we got kicked out, you know, earlier, in the, went further each year. You know, my freshman year, we got kicked out probably after the first round or so. Then second year, we went to Elite Eight. Then my third year, junior, I got a chance to experience the Final Four. So, you know, we got kicked out. We got beat up pretty good by Kansas. So each year, I think those memories come back, you know, how the process was for me. I was lucky enough to go further and further each year. But my senior year, just being with my, you know, my brothers, my teammates, having fun with it, enjoying it, and how well we played. You know, we were lucky enough to stay healthy, play well. And, you know, we had some tight, one or two tight games early on, but toward the end, you know, we played so well that we won most of our games by double digits. And it was not as stress, you know, not as stressful as the years prior, but we got a chance to do it in front of our families, which some of us have them still, some of us don't. Some of us wasn't sure if they're going to be there or not, or able to make it or see it. So win a, you know, national championship in front of your family. As a kid growing up, it was all your dream is to be a Carolina player. Not only just go to Carolina, but win a national championship. To do that in front of your friends and family and make them proud is just, it's an unbelievable feeling and hard to put into words and describe of, you know, just how satisfying or gratifying that is, you know.
I'm sure. All right. So you get drafted into the NBA, second round draft pick by the Cleveland Cavaliers. You play 20, because, like, you know, people forget about this. You know, it's like now you're like a San Antonio Spur. You won a championship with the Spurs. But the way you actually came to the Spurs, you got drafted by Cleveland. You played about 20 games by the Cavaliers. You get bounced to the D League. You get waived. You go, you get picked up by the Spurs. Then you get your ass sent back to the D League. Then you wind up playing overseas and all this. Then you finally make it to San Antonio. When you're going through all this, you know, you're a high school star, you play at North Carolina, you win a championship, you know, you're doing your thing. Are you like going, what the hell's going on? Like, and what was the sort of thing that you learned about your game that changed? Like, you know, like, or was it one thing? Like, is it footwork? Is it drop step? Is it a step back three? Like, or is it just a combination of things, you know, where you sort of figured out and were able to play at the NBA level? Or is it just politics and opportunity? What was it for you?
It's everything that you just mentioned together.
I'm a basketball mind, Danny. That's what they call me. They do say that I'm a basketball mind.
Yeah, no, I see. Trust me, I follow. I see how much you're into sports, not just basketball, but all sports, and you're great at it. You're great at what you do. You do your research, do your due diligence, and you know what you're talking about. You might be a GM one day. So for me, like I said, for me it was you know, going through that process, up and down roller coaster. Being in Cleveland, I learned a lot. Obviously, playing with and against, you know, LeBron and Shaq and those guys every day in practice. You know, Anthony Parker, Delonte West, Mo Williams, all those guys on the Cleveland Cavaliers, a very talented team. And they're, you know, older guys, good veterans. But it's a different type of atmosphere. You know, more lax days, a little more party, younger group. When I got to San Antonio, I learned a lot. You know, not saying it wasn't professional in Cleveland, but way different level of professionalism when it comes to, you know, Timmy, you know, Manu, Tony, you know, those guys and how they handle business. Really, no, all they do is basketball. There's no real, you know, fun partying. They're just on the plane. There's no gamblers, no nothing, you know, no card games. You know, they're just business. But they get along and hang out once in a while when they can here and there. But for me, let's say going up and down, I didn't realize it was one skill set. It was just perfecting certain skill sets so that, you know, teams could identify you as something. So, I mean, I was a good player at, you know, certain things, certain aspects of games. I was pretty good. I was good at a lot of things, but not great at anything. So in order to be identified at something, I had to be great at something, and I had to figure whether it's, you know, shooting, defense, and for me, obviously in San Antonio, it was always defense. So I was hanging my hat on that end of the floor, but then also I wanted to be a great shooter, a pure shooter, and that also made me a threat in the offensive end of the floor. So the more I worked on things, I just kept repetition with my coaches, my individual developmental, you know, coaches, of doing the same things over and over to raise my percentages to be, you know, a shooter where, you know, guys had to guard me and respect me. So I worked on those things just, you know, a ton more. Just everything is, you know, timing, opportunity, and I said sometimes politics. But, you know, the timing of it was great because San Antonio, you know, Manu, Tony were getting a little older. They didn't have a deep bench. and we had opportunity to come in. You know, Richard Jefferson was there at the time, but then they had traded him away. And there wasn't a lot of guys on the bench that they were sold on, or that they were like, all right, we're going to keep this guy forever. We wouldn't, you know, so I had an opportunity to make my mark. And so the timing was just perfect for me. And then I said, like, opportunity always comes, because eventually an NBA game, NBA season, so many games, everybody gets hurt. Somebody's going to get hurt. Every team has injuries. You just have to be, you know, ready, prepared to take the opportunity when it comes your way. And Pop, he's always good at throwing the new guys in there, see what you can do, you know, early. You know, Danny, go get in there. You know, he'll throw in whoever's new call up from D-League. Go in there, see what you can do. Guard this guy. So when, you know, I got the opportunity, I was able to show that, you know, I could be trusted, or I was capable of not letting the team down, or capable of being in this league and belonging and actually maybe helping the team some a little bit. So, you know, just waiting for the right opportunity, being the 15th man on the bench or coming from the D-League and just waiting. And so Manu broke his hand. He got injured. So there's a lot of opportunity there for whoever was up for the grabs. And it was me and a couple other guys fighting it out for minutes to see, you know, who should play more minutes, play the two, and help fill that, you know, void or that role that Manu, you know, him missing. And, you know, lucky for me, I said I was prepared for it.
Shooting has been something you've been good at, you know, great at, elite at. Yeah. But when you're going from, you know, a good college shooter to, you know, a good NBA shooter, what was the thing that sort of took you to that area? Is it like just being able to, like, to know that your coach is supporting you shooting the ball?
All of those things, man, once again, come into play. Once you shoot more, you become more confident. You become more relaxed. The more you hit some, obviously, the more your coach encourages it, the more your coach trusts you to shoot it. But that also is a big key to have. The confidence can make or break a guy or a player in this league, in any league. Because guys are very talented, and some of them just have the confidence to perform on that level or that stage, or they have confidence behind or their coach or whatever it is, or don't have the opportunity, and they kind of phase out or just lose themselves and, you know, kind of don't follow up on it. But, you know, the more you work on it, the more confident you get in it. For me, it was obviously technique of doing repetition the same way over and over, and making sure my shot, I didn't shoot it differently every time. And that, you know, raised my percentage a ton. But also just, you know, shooting and confident, having my coaches behind me, being more confident of, you know, telling me to shoot every time that I'm open. And, you know, once you start hitting some, it helps, you know, be more relaxed and just shoot the ball and not think about it. But it started with me with just repetition of shooting the same way every time, doing techniques and doing it over and over. Thousands of times, you know, two a day, just getting a lot of shots up.
When you're putting in that work, and I'm sure you do it now, I've had the honor of being around, you know, NBA players and watch them do, you know, shoot around when there's no cameras and practice and all that stuff. You know, walk me through, like, you know, in the summertime or even in the regular season, like, walk me through, like, your shooting routine if you're putting in a good day's work, whether it's season or off season. Like, if Danny Green at this point in his career wants to, like, really, you know, give a good day of shooting, what is it?
It's for sure makes. Because when you go for the makes, you'll get the reps up because you're not going to make 100%. You know, most shooters, even when they're wide open, they're doing their drills, they might shoot, you know, 70-80% at best. So you're still, if you make 500, you're going to end up taking, you know, 600-700 shots at least for that day, which is a good shooting rep. But a lot of times for me is, you know, getting warm, getting technique, repetition, and then makes.
How many are the makes? Many.
On a good day, you know, at least, you know, what's it, 300 to 500 it could range. Wow. But it could be different. You know, we'll do some twos, we'll do some threes. When I was younger, high school, obviously a lot more now, it's just, you know, repetition of maintenance. You don't have to do as many. Probably has had a good day for me now, probably about 300. But the most part for me is that it's just, you don't have to do long stints. You can do, you know, 45 minutes to an hour and a half of workout of just, you know, good practicing the right things and doing it at a pace that's game speed. And that's, you know, more productive than doing a whole bunch of shots, a whole bunch of shooting, you know, because sometimes you'll just get tired. You won't do it the right way every time. And now you're practicing bad habits. So it's good probably to do, you know, 45 minutes to an hour and a half of, you know, good quality, productive, you know, shooting, movement. And you, a lot of times when you do the shooting, you're like, I want to make this many at this spot. I want to make, you know, 10 out of 13 or 10 out of, you know, 15. I want to make 10, but I can't miss more than two or three shots. If I miss more than two, I got to start over. You know, so, you know, that right there is probably being efficient and doing it, you know, in a time efficient amount as well. And just at game speed, I think, is more important than getting a big or a lot of reps or quantity of hours and, you know, a bunch of stuff that people don't make any sense to do in the gym, because a lot of stuff will be counterproductive when you're not doing it the right way.
You've played against other great shooters, and it's, you know, it's like I said, you know, I've had the fortune of watching, you know, up close, you know, some guys do, like I saw Steph do it in practice. I saw Clay do it in practice. You know, I've been around the big three. You know, I've seen Brian Scalabrine, mm-hmm. believe it or not, make 30 in a row. Shocking yeah. as it might sound, but I saw it with my own eyes. Who are the other shooters, you know, who are the ones that stick out throughout your career?
Obviously, you know, those guys that you mentioned are
Scalabrine, Brian Scalabrine.
I mean, yeah, I mean, he's still a professional. End of the day, guys that are professionals, they can shoot the ball. They outshoot any, you know, normal human being.
Right.
And not all of them are great shooters, but they're still professionals, and they score the ball. There's a reason why they're on that, you know, level of play. But, you know, Steph and Clay and Katie, those guys have the ultimate confidence. And that's the number one, that's a factor right there. And obviously they're great shooters. They're the best shooters probably in the history of the game. They get a lot of reps up. They have unbelievable touch. But there were some guys that I played with and against, like a Matt Bonner. He shot it greatly. Obviously, he picked and choose his moments when to shoot. You know, he's more of a fishing guy. He didn't like to shoot when guys were too close or contested. But, you know, you see him do drills. He's a pure shooter. He used to hit. We had a Spurs 100. He used to be in the 80s and 90s. You know, I think he holds a record for it. Steve Novak. Another guy. It's a lot of shooting. So pretty basically 100 threes, and how many you can make at 100 threes, but it's off movement. And it's off doing this, off doing that.
That's crazy.
And those guys would be in the 80s and 90s out of 100, you know, making, you know, off movement threes. So those are some guys with just natural stroke that, you know, they shoot it unbelievable, and they have confidence. Every time they catch it and shoot it, they believe it. They know it's going in.
When people ask you about Tim Duncan, and it's probably a rhetorical question. I mean, you know, Manu, Tim Duncan, and Tony Parker, these are three iconic players. All three are so under the radar and under sort of appreciated. You know, Tony's never brought up as a top point guard, even when he was at his very best. Manu, you know, you forget. So let me just ask you about Tim Duncan.
For me, playing with him, against him in practice, he was such a high IQ player and mentally strong and everything. He's a confident, but he was the greatest teammate you could ever ask for. Timmy was just the mentally toughest guy that I've been around. And, you know, obviously Manu too, Tony, those guys are all mentally tough and very confident. But Timmy was the greatest teammate you could ask for, because he knew he was very good. He knew how good he was, but he encouraged you as if you were better than him. He always encouraged his teammates, and I think he was underrated in a lot of things that he did other than scoring. Like, he was a great passer. He was a great screener. He did all the little things that most superstars don't do, and that comes from his, you know, humbleness of, you know, not having an ego and encouraging his teammates, you know, to shoot. You know, he encouraged me to shoot more than him, and I'm like, you're Tim Duncan, dude. You should be asking me to give you the ball. And he'd be like, you know, he's finding ways to get people open. He's finding ways to get easy baskets for everybody else and encouraging you. And that's a big key, because, you know, let's say confidence is a big thing in our league. And he knew how to get younger guys to play better and to be confident. Pop does the same thing, but he knew how to push us and also how to just be, you know, have our backs to allow us to play our game, because he's so confident in us and encouraged us, coming from a guy of that stature. And that's, you know, where he's at, you know, as a player in our league, and how respected he is. And, you know, he's a Hall of Famer. All three of those guys are Hall of Famers, and they compete unbelievably. So,
did you ever see him get pissed or frustrated? You know, like, he always seems so mild-mannered. Like, would he ever get frustrated or, like, you know, sort of break out of what the perception of Tim Duncan character would be?
Yeah, it's not often, because it's so mentally strong, like I said.
And like I said earlier, the 2004 finals against the Miami Heat, the evil Miami Heatles, you sent them packing. I couldn't stand them. They made me sick. I watched that game five. That's the last time me and my father, he's still alive, but we watched that game five. We went crazy. It was two New Yorkers going crazy, rooting for the San Antonio Spurs. you guys basically sent LeBron James packing. You sent him back to Cleveland. How fulfilling was that? Now, I know you're a San Antonio Spurs. I know you guys don't talk a lot of trash. But in hindsight, how beautiful was that to kick their asses in five games? And they didn't even come back for more. Like, in my opinion, like, that was like, you know, they beat you once, you beat them once. Let's re-up and come back for Frazier, Ali, three. You sent them back to Cleveland. When you think back to that finals and you guys beat them in five games, completely just disorienting and dismantling that team, how fulfilling was that to win that championship?
It was very fulfilling, man. I think more so because the year before they had beaten us.
Painful.
And the way they had beaten us, because we thought we had it, we should have won. They were obviously a great team. We felt like we made a lot of mistakes in game 6 and 7 where we beat ourselves and allowed them back into the game.
Is the Ray Allen shot the game 6?
Yes. That's the one that really hurt the most, game 6. Because once it's hard to beat a team at home in game 7. It's only happened once. I think Cleveland has done it against Golden State before that. And it never happened before. Game 7, no other team has won on the road. So we knew we had to get game 6. And the way we lost it, it was very tough. So the following year, beating them was very fulfilling and you know, satisfying. And obviously, you know, we wanted to see them again, but I think it was more of a relief that, you know, that they broke up. We had to play that team again because they were really good, man. And you got to give them a lot of credit. They had 3 all-stars. They were tough to play against. And I'm like, all right, you know, Bron left, went back to Cleveland. I think that's kind of a relief. We don't have to see those guys again. We can go back to, you know, hopefully the finals again and play a different type of team. And, you know, at that time, we thought we had a shot to keep it going, but you know, injuries happen, guys get older, things like that. But to lose to them in game 7 and come back and be able to win the way we did and beat them in 5 games, very fulfilling, man.
You know, you're talking about that game 6 with the infamous Ray Allen shot. And, you know, they talk about the trophy being nearby the court. Were you aware of that? Like, in all honesty, like, could you tell, like, the arena was setting up for the Spurs to win this championship?
No, I didn't see. Everybody kept saying the ropes were out, the trophy was out. I didn't see that. I did see people leaving. I know a lot of people were leaving. They thought the game was over.
Oh, they left. They went to the club. They were listening to EDM music. They went to go eat oysters and go to the club.
Yeah, they're saying people were trying to get back in the doors. You know, went into overtime. They wouldn't let people back in. But I didn't see the trophy. I didn't see the ropes. But we were up. We had a couple shots to make. We had a couple chances to make some free throws. We missed them. And, you know, Ray hit that big shot, put it into overtime. And then, you know, after that, it was all short. They had a, you know, great overtime, you know, a couple of minutes. The team got hot and had the momentum. But so I did not see the trophy or the ropes. I just saw a lot of people leaving and kind of, you know, everybody in the arena was kind of deflated and, you know, thought we had won it. So, but it's just crazy how quick a game could change like that.
Yeah, that was nuts. Now, you played with LeBron. You mentioned when you were with Cleveland, you played against LeBron. Give me a LeBron story. Give me, like, what makes him so ridiculously good? Whether something you know you remember from when you played with him or playing against him. Like, when you're old, when you're 90, and you're back in Long Island, okay? And your great-grandkids say, Grandpa Danny, great-great-grandpa Danny. What was it like playing up against LeBron James? Or what was it like being a teammate with LeBron James? What's the single thing that you'll say or the single story that you'll say?
There's a lot of things you could say about the guy, man. I know you're not a big fan of him, but
I mean, I respect, you know, the crap out of him. is it known, Danny, that I'm not a fan? But like, that's funny that you say it is known. It's known worldwide and throughout the NBA. That's a fact.
Yeah, it's known. It's known that you're not a big fan of Bron.
Did you see me last year at Game 5 show up in Golden State with a plunger? Because I was at that game with a plunger.
No, I didn't see it.
Okay, I was at that game with a plunger, and I was in Cleveland at Game 3 with a broom. Anyway, go ahead.
Yes, it's known that you're not a big fan of him, so, and I understand, but you might have had a bad experience. The dude is a really humble, down-to-earth kind of dude once you get to know him and understand about him. And you probably had an unfortunate situation where things might have got miscommunicated and, you know, things didn't go the way. He might have turned out to look not as good, but he knows how to have fun, and he knows how to get his teammates on board. He's a great player because of how he does so many things great. Like I said, Not many people can do a lot, many things great. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a great pass. He's a great rebounder. He's a great scorer. He's a great leader. He's a great teammate. You know, he knows how to encourage his guys and get them playing their best. Mm. He can turn. He can take a guy off the worst team in the NBA right now that's not playing great and bring him to Cleveland or bring him on Bronze team, and he'll have him playing, being a totally different player.
Well, what is it, though? Like, what is it? He helps you. He builds. He finds out what you're good at, and he wants to accentuate definitely. Them, and he builds that confidence in you?
Definitely. And he just encourages you. He encourages you to, you know, play your game and shoot. And he's very similar to Timmy in that aspect of, you know, being a humble, down-to-earth guy and, you know, letting you play and be you and encouraging you to play, you know, good basketball. And so he knows how to win now, obviously, going to Miami. He learned a lot from there. He knows how to win and be a leader, a better leader. But I've seen him take over games, man. Before I even got to Cleveland, when he was, you know, doing his thing against Detroit in the playoffs, even when I got there. There's games during the season and even the playoffs that he's just taking over games, and he was the only guy scoring, you know, the next 20 points. Like, he'll run off 18, 20 points straight in a quarter or in a half. And he was doing some amazing things. And a lot of that, it goes to show, because naturally, to me, he's not a natural scorer. He's mm-hmm. more of a point guard. You know, mm-hmm. he's more of a passer. So for him to be able to do those things, and they say, oh, he can't shoot. But, you know, he worked on that. He did this. He does so many things great, and he's gotten better every year. And just his IQ, I think, what separates him from everybody else. That height, at that size, that speed, there's a lot of guys that have, you know, God-given talent. But the IQ puts him over the edge of everybody else, and that's why he's, you know, so great at what he does. And also gets the best out of his teammates. He knows how to – what angles to get them or what right. angles to go at them or to approach them to get them on the same page that he's on and get them playing their game and better basketball just being with him. Your confidence levels go up, you know, a ton, just playing around them, being with them, playing against them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, he's sick. He's sick. I was with Chauncey Billups the other day, and he heard me giving LeBron love, and he said we almost had like a prayer service. He was like, I'm proud of you, Mike, you know. I mean, like, listen, he's ridiculous. I got a couple more questions for you, Danny. Manu Ginobili, future Hall of Famer, one of my favorite players in the league, and he's one of the guys in that Game 5. I can't remember exactly what happened, but I felt like somebody pushed him or knocked him down. There's a dirty player. Then he wound up banging it on the head of somebody on the Miami Heatles, and the rest was history.
Yeah, he ended up getting a dunk on the break over Chris Bosh, and he just came out hot, man. He's just the ultimate competitor. There's no other way to describe it. Just warrior, the most competitive guy I've ever seen. I've been around. He doesn't need coaching. That's how competitive he is. You know, Pop usually gets on everybody. Pop doesn't have to get on Manu to be this, to do that, because he knows he's going to get what he's going to get from Manu night in, night out, just him being himself. He coaches himself. He motivates himself. He pushes himself. He's going to dive, even at 40 years old, he's diving on the floor. He's putting his body on the line. He literally gave up parts of his body he shouldn't have for this organization. Mm. You know, he had to get surgery for. So, and he's willing to do it again. He still takes charges, even though he has, you know, chest plate issues or even though he got knee in the groin area and had to get surgeries. He still would put his body on the line, his lifeline, diving into the crowd and doing those types of things, even at 40. And a lot of guys at that age, with the money that they made or he's made, don't compete. They compete, you know, they play one side, they take plays off. Manu's not taking plays off. He's giving everything he's got every play, man. He's just the ultimate competitor.
Now, I'm a huge fan, and I have my own hair issues myself, Danny. Was it a team effort? did you guys come together as a Spurs organization? Did it happen in Argentina? How did we get Manu to finally go, the party's over and we got to go to the low cut haircut? I want you to keep it real. Now, I know this is the Spurs and it's a quiet organization. Was there a team meeting about the hair? Because it was like everybody breathed a sigh of relief when he shaved it down. Because it was like 2 or 3 years. It's like, Manu, you're a Hall of Famer. You look nuts. You look crazy. Like, it's time. The party's over. Please walk me through how we got to this point, because now he looks fantastic.
Yeah, man, he's owned it. And Manu, believe it or not, he used to be like on covers of magazines with like hair magazines, like Head and Shoulders had the long, you know, Spanish hair.
Yeah, he looked fantastic.
But his hair had changed. It did. But his hair, I think he went through that process before I even got here, of shaving it down. He had a little bald spot in the middle, and I guess, you know, he shaved it down. I don't know if it was a team meeting or not, or if anybody came to him, or his wife maybe. I don't know, or his teammates in Argentina. But he made that decision before I got to San Antonio. So I'd have to ask him about that. You know, when he decided to let it go.
Okay.
And fully, you know, I'll ask him that for you and then get back to you on that one.
All right. Cause I came to ask you the hard hitting questions and I felt like that's like, you know, the elephant in the room that everybody's been wanting to know when they talk to Ginobili. And I'm just like, we got to get to the bottom of it. I want to hear your insight on this. This is the other team meeting question. You know, the Kawhi Leonard situation has been all season long, this mystery. You, which was sort of, again, not a San Antonio Spur thing, you know, you sort of debunked that there was a team meeting. I don't know how, if there is a players-only meeting, how the media would even know about it. I really don't understand how that works. What's going on with Kawhi? And, like, just, you know, and listen, I'm not trying to walk you into anything. Just what's going on with Kawhi? And how did you want, like, you tweeted, which, again, it's not like a Spurs thing.
Yeah, no, I felt it was necessary at the time because it was false information. It couldn't have been more false. So I don't know how media gets a hold of these things, but team meeting for us, people make it seem like it's this big ordeal. It's just locker room talk. We're just in the locker room talking. And it's just, all right, we'll excuse the training staff and we'll just talk. It's not really a big thing. We talk in the locker room every day, even at practice. So you can say we have meetings every day. But it was there 5 or 10 minutes, you know, nothing major was discussed. Obviously, he's going through, you know, more so, you know, we let him know that we have his back regardless of what's going on. We know it's a process for him. It's a different, weird type of injury in his body is going through. He had a couple setbacks, obviously. But, you know, we're hearing a lot of things from the media of, you know, this and that. And I guess the communication between us, not saying had gotten lost, but it just wasn't up to date because we had been on the road so much. But we just always refocus back when we get back in town. Of everybody that's injured, or everybody that's not been on, or even when we're losing games or when we're winning games, we just circle back, refocus, and talk to each other and see what's going on, make sure we're all on the same page. We had a team meeting after we had lost like 9 out of our last 10. Nobody talked about that one though.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we just talked about refocusing and stuff like that. But I don't know how it gets out to the media. They obviously looking for stuff. They reach, they search, they try to have, they need something to write. The reason why I tweeted something because I knew we didn't have practice that day or the next day, we wouldn't see them, and it's going to be all on everybody's timeline, all on the TV, and they're going to be talking about this issue that is, you know, 95% incorrect. The only thing that was correct about it is that there was a meeting, but you can call anything a meeting. But other than that, the whole, you know, I guess article or everything that was put in it was incorrect. So I just said, you know, that's false information. Because I didn't want to hear about it for the next 2 days before we got a chance to talk to the media and be like, you know, that's not true. So, and everybody's on, you know, first take and here and then running with it. And then I just don't feel like having to deal with all the questions and my timelines being blown up. Everybody asking me questions, but the only person that really knows what's going on with Kawhi is Kawhi. We know that he has, he's had a weird injury. He's fighting to get back. Mentally, he's not found a place where he can sustain a good percentage of health where his leg, I guess, won't give out or have weakness when he starts playing again. He's been, you know, doing his workouts, and the reason why we have meetings or talk to him because a lot of his workouts take place after we leave, you know, after we leave the facility. So, you know, we're just, how's, you know, right now, it's the only person that really knows what's going on with Kawhi is Kawhi. We don't know what percentage that is. We don't know his date or time. So everybody keeps asking him. We don't know because I don't think he knows. And, you know, he's hearing from doctors. He's still waiting to be cleared and figured out what percentage is. So every time we give the answer and people think like, oh, it's a big secret. You guys know some more information. We don't. The only person that really knows is Kawhi. And him, I don't think he even knows. So either way, we still have his back. You know, we let him know that. We just, you know, keep an updated process. But at the same time, you know, we're moving forward playing as if he might not come back. We don't know the situation. The doctors know better than us. And, you know, the better understanding, he could explain it better than anybody, but said, I don't think he even knows as well. He's just waiting to be cleared and, you know, going through his process, working out every day. And so a lot of his stuff takes place after we leave. So that's why we don't know. So we just try to keep, you know, updating and communicating. That happens at least once a week. We talk all the time. But the other stuff in that locker room was nothing major. You know, even if it was, we wouldn't talk about it to the media anyway.
How is it for you, you know, like NBA players in particular, but all athletes, obviously football, you know, being the second most, but you guys, it's like a freaking feeding frenzy, and it's changed so much even since you gotten in the league. And you're a young guy, but the Instagramification and the Twitter, and like, you know, you could be doing a random you know, post game interview after a game in Milwaukee, you could have, you know, twisted your ankle, had a bad game and lost. And if your attitude or what you say isn't carefully thought out, it becomes national news. I mean, it just seems like such a burden for all of you guys. But, you know, like the guys, the stars like LeBron, Russell Westbrook, KD, Steph, you know, it's got to be sickening. But for all of you guys, if you just say one wrong thing, one wrong tweet, it's like the world stops on its axis.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy because I put that tweet out, didn't know it would go viral like that. It's very basic and you have to be so careful because so many things going on in the world. Obviously, people now, everything is sensitive, you know, with, you know, younger kids, schooling, this, you know, growing up, there wasn't as much social media. There wasn't as much this, much that. And obviously, everything wasn't so, I guess, you know, sensitive with certain things on the internet. You know, there wasn't bullying, cyberbullying. There wasn't this, there wasn't that. And you had to be careful with everything you say. People take it the wrong way. You know, you can't even buy a dog without somebody telling you how you need to buy your dog or do it that way or, you know, the breeders are this, that, and that. That's the wrong way. You can't wear certain clothes without somebody,
right,
you know, saying something about it. So, and I'm not under the same microscope as those guys you mentioned, and I can't believe what they are. But you have to be so careful what you say, what you put out, what you tweet. You have to reread it. You have to have people look over it, or, you know, just think about it first and then ask. If you're questioning, you probably should have somebody look it over. And, you know, I've learned from my mistakes in the past. We've all had many mistakes on the internet. So from there, it's best not to even comment, especially on political issues. Best not to comment on any of it, but it's best not to post if you're not sure, you know, ask somebody to review it. You know, I've put up wrong pictures. I've put up wrong captions for wrong things for 2 minutes and, you know, it's got misconstrued and taken out of context. And now I'm this person that none of these people even know who I am, but I'm this person that people make me out to be that's not even close to who I am. But you have to be so careful, man. And it's tough to even be yourself. And that's why a lot of guys, as much as fans want to be involved in our lives and see how we interact on social media, we have to limit it because of how careful we have to be and how sensitive, you know, the world is to some of the things that we do and say. We can't even be ourselves or, you know, let them into our lives on, you know, via social media like that.
My final question, Popovich, you know, we talk about social media and being careful. You know, one of the things that I think, you know, that's made him even more beloved and respected is that he's been so outspoken about political things, about social things. What is having this Hall of Fame coach in front of you particularly, and you're a New York guy, you know, who's not afraid to be himself. He's not afraid to say what he wants to say. He's not afraid to have an emotional reaction. And he, you know, he's obviously for the people. You know what I mean? What does Greg Popovich mean to you?
That's the way he handles things off the court is probably the main reason why most guys come here and are proud to play for him. Obviously, he's a great coach. Very tough to play for most times. You have to be very mentally tough. And it's a culture shock change for me and many other people, you know, being yourself, pulling him back, learning how to do this, doing it his way. But because of how outspoken he is for us off the court, you know, it allows us to express, you know, so many guys, we have different countries, different cultures. Mm-hmm. It allows us to express, you know, where we come from, our culture and how we feel about it. And if we want to, you know, bring some attention to this or this needs to be brought to this, we can actually talk to him about that or bring that up and say, you know, we want to do this for that or do this for this, because he's so open-minded when it comes to those things. And it, you know, makes us proud to be a part of his organization and be, you know, part of his family. You know, he's family now. I've been here for some years with him and many other coaches and everybody that comes through. And once you're a Spur, you're always a Spur and they always treat you like family. So for him, he's big, you know, not just for basketball, but our community, you know, the minorities. He speaks out, you know, for us more than, you know, anybody else that I've seen. He's always, you know, trying to find a way to do this, to educate us, you know, to see what's going on, not just in the United States, but other countries of the world, and realizing, you know, we're just playing basketball. We're very lucky, we're blessed, and it's just a game. You know, even though we're losing, we're competitive, we compete, we want to win, we want to do great, but at the end of the day, it's just a basketball game, and we don't realize other parts of the world, people are going to, and that aspect of life, you know, he's amazing.
All right, listen, I'm going to let you go. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you rock with me, Danny. I've been a fan. I want you guys to get it together in the playoffs, competitive Western Conference. told you my mom's from Long Island. De La Soul, Rakim, you got, you know, Howard Stern, Dr. J, Eddie Murphy, Natalie Portman, Danny Green. I mean, the Scaramucci, that's like a little sore on the Long Island list of people. But I've been a fan for a long time, man. And, you know, I would love to have you back face-to-face, talk more hoops to do.
Same, man. I really appreciate it. I would love to do that, too. I'll be in L.A. some off-season, whenever we can catch up, man. I really appreciate you having me. And as soon as we can catch up again, I'm definitely all for it.
And let's do, in the summertime, let's do 300 makes. You might like to bring a sleeping bag and a pillow, but I'll get it done.
I'm there with you, man. I'm going to help you through it. I'm going to be a good teammate.
All right, cool, man. Yo, enjoy the rest of the season. Have a healthy rest of the season and kick ass in the playoffs. Give them problems.
Appreciate that, man. I really appreciate it.
All right, cool, Danny. Thank you, my man.
Anytime.
All right, listen. It's the best show in the world. It's the Ian Rapoport Stereo Podcast. Okay, we came, we saw, we conquered. Have no fear, the Ian Rapoport Stereo Podcast is here. Danny Green, Broadway Danny Green. Thank you for rocking on the Ian Rapoport Stereo Podcast. I can't wait to do it again. This summer, we're going to have a little shooting contest. I want to have a little show. I want you to see my stroke. I got a left-handed stroke. It's beautiful.
No Bruno.
Thank you for rocking on the Ian Rapoport Stereo Podcast. That's our second San Antonio Spurn. Kyle Anderson was our first. I plan on having many, many more.
Get Kawhi.
What?
Get Kawhi.
Oh. Love it. All right. We're done. Miles Jordan, the Dust Brothers, best producers in the business, take us out of here with a banger, a smacker, and let it rock for a little while. Let the people rock. Okay, let the people enjoy the Moody Beats. My name is Michael Rapoport. His name is G Moody. His last name rhymes with Duty. This is the Ian Rapoport Stereo Podcast. We'll be back with another banger later on in the week. It's primetime podcasting next.
Peace.